Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
And good afternoon, friends. Yes, we're here on Freedom 106.5 FM and, of course, simultaneously on Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5 FM and Vibe City 105 FM. It's now 10 minutes after 12. It's time now for your favorite doctor, your favorite lunchtime doctor, Dr. Safiya Mohammed. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bass, and good afternoon to everyone tuned in, locked in for the next hour, right here to your lunchtime doctor. I am Dr. Safiya Mohammed, here to help you detangle those medical challenges, offer some sort of advice to help you on your next steps, and to ensure if there are red flags, we can seek to deal with them immediately. Of course, we invite you to share what's on your lunchtime plate. What healthy habits have you learned, and what are your next steps in sharing healthy advice, not just to your loved ones, but to those around you? This is your lunchtime doctor, and Bass is going to share those numbers for you.
All right, those numbers, as always, are 627-3223, 625-2257. And, of course, on WhatsApp, 306-1065. Feel free to message our other frequencies, and they will forward your messages right to us.
Thank you so much. So this morning, we looked at on CNC3 the incidence, the problem, the very diverse conversation on lupus. In fact, we had two callers calling in onto the morning program, sharing that they were grateful that in the awareness that we brought forward, they've had the disease for 115 years, 120 plus years, and still not enough information was available. In our morning brew CNC3, and of course, in your Guardian Health Plus pages today, we gave that information about lupus. And we're going to talk a little bit more about it here, right here on the Lunchtime Doctor.
All right, folks, once again, those numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257. And our WhatsApp messages, as always, 306-1065. Let's get in right away with those questions. Dear Doctor, is there any way to get rid of varicose veins?
So I'm glad that you all asked about varicose veins. We actually haven't had this question in quite a while, and we used to get it quite often. So yes, there are things you can do for varicose veins. It first and foremost, it depends on what are the triggers, what are the associated non-communicable diseases, as in what causes it. Right? What we need to understand is that the varicose veins themselves are weak or damaged valves within the veins. And think of your veins like tubules. They're valves that help the blood flow. These veins return the blood from the entire body to the heart to deoxygenate it and then continue to supply the entire body. But these veins, the blood, actually work against gravity. So if the valves in the veins are damaged, then obviously you're going to see these very protuberant and unhealthy looking, or this achy feeling in your legs from the varicose veins. In fact, some can even appear twisted, bulging. Some can be darkened in color. What can you do? Like I said, let's understand the cause for it. So if there is high blood pressure, then obviously that's going to worsen the flow of blood. If you have peripheral artery disease where there's cholesterol blocking those veins, then that's obviously going to worsen it. If there's any ulcerations, if there's any blood clots. So what we suggest all of our patients with varicose veins, we have them using what we call the varicose stockings. And yes, to the men, it's like a socks. So it's a compression socks. And that helps defy gravity. So it helps allow that blood flow and increase the circulation. We want to encourage you all as well to increase your activity. Just walking alone and some sort of physical activity will certainly improve your varicose veins. You want to also ensure you're not having salt. If you can cut off the salt, even better. High fiber diet is all of that is what will enable or reduce some of the risk factors. there are medications specifically for varicose veins, and of course, there's surgical treatment. But you can start today just by those simple exercises, elevating the legs in the afternoon, doing some of those exercises that we've talked about at the ankle, increasing the circulation, wearing compression socks, watching your salt in your diet. All of these things will certainly help alleviate varicose veins.
All right, let's get some WhatsApp messages here. Good day, doctor. My son has diarrhea and he doesn't want to drink the Pedialyte. He is 5 years old.
So when it comes to having diarrhea, we need to rehydrate. That is so important. A five-year-old may have reduced appetite, not only because of the diarrhea. I'm not too sure if he's vomiting as well. But there are other alternatives if he's not in the mood or feeling fanciful for Pedialyte. Here's a quick little suggestion that can help. I'm hoping he does like some fruits. You can indeed use the puree juices. You can use that and freeze it. So then they literally are making their own popsicles. You can also have your home squeezed fruits. Those juices is much preferable over any sort of chemical packaged ingredients. Now, yes, Pedialyte comes pretty close to the normal balance of the electrolytes of a child, and we do recommend it. Pediatricians recommend it as well. But if your child is not favorable for the flavor, for the taste, then these are some options to do: either your home squeezed, home prepared juices, or use the puree into some frozen ice, and then you can make your popsicles at home. You can even use the Pedialyte and create those popsicles as well. But keep in mind, if your child is dehydrated, vomiting and diarrhea, let's also treat the cause. I don't know if it's gastro. I don't know if it's some sort of salmonella infection. You may need to go to a pediatrician or at least your family doctor to be reviewed properly. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. What happens to the blood after a splenectomy, since the spleen is responsible for filtering damaged blood cells? Also, can someone have lupus without showing symptoms besides affected platelet levels?
So yes, someone can have lupus and not show some of these symptoms. In fact, lupus is considered one of the most mysterious diseases, misunderstood and unpredictable because of the range of symptoms and very generalized type symptoms. Now let's jump into, for those who want more information on lupus, in your Guardian Health Plus, we talk just about everything on lupus. When it comes to surgery that removes the spleen now, that splenectomy, that's usually because there was either some sort of enlarged part, damaged part, or diseased part. Yes, the blood cells still have other locations that breaks down the blood cells, even though the spleen is removed. In fact, the body can survive without the spleen. That's why a splenectomy is indeed a recommended procedure if the spleen is diseased, damaged, or enlarged. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, Doc. It's been years. I'm having a pain on my right side of my abdomen. When it's bad, I go to my PD. Doctor, after ultrasound on many occasions, nothing is being seen. Treatments only help for a short time. What can I do?
I'm so sorry you're going through such pain. Now, you said it's pain over an extensive amount of time. You do get treatment. I presume there's some sort of resolution. Let's go a little bit deeper. Is it one of those symptoms, one of those disease processes that not often considered, like irritable bowel syndrome? Is it an autoimmune condition? Sometimes we do overarching treatment and not go a little bit deeper to understand what is the real trigger. Some of these disease processes, these pathologies, may need more intensive investigation. So I would suggest, if that ever occurs again, not just an ultrasound is is needed, but allow your healthcare physician to go a little bit deeper with the history, with the examination, and ensure a trigger or a cause is indeed found. Hope this answers your question.
All right, so of course, 627-3223-625-2257. We're getting ready to take some calls. They were coming in while the doctor was speaking, and we were asking those WhatsApp questions. We're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sky 99.5. You are listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. All right, so while those calls come in, we will take a WhatsApp message. All right, good afternoon, doctor. I've been having a lot of headaches recently. All right, wait, let's take this call and we'll get back to that. All right, hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes?
Good afternoon to the doctor.
Good afternoon, you're live on air.
Okay, I'm calling to find out. I have a problem with my shoulder. I did an x-ray and it said that I am showing early signs of osteoarthritis. Also, I have a T-bone issue. Now, I'm scheduled to take a steroid injection. How safe is that?
Thank you so much for calling. Thank you so much for calling in, and I'm glad that you are moving forward in finding some sort of resolution for your condition. It does sound indeed one that has been debilitating, and that's why it needs the corticosteroid injection. How safe it is? We've been administering steroid injections into the joints or even into as in epidurals for quite a number of years. It is very safe once administered by a secured medical professional. I am certain that is the case in your case, so I'm sure that will bring a fair amount of relief. You see, there we do the injections, we either do it intramural or intra-articular. Intra-articular means into the joint, directly maybe the knee, I don't know which joint in particular. And these injections can either be done on the local anesthetic or a little bit more serious general anesthetic. But again, your healthcare professional will go through that with you. I am certain it will bring a fair amount of relief. It is, however, a step-by-step process. You will have to, they may need to increase, they may need to adjust the medications, because when it comes to pain, one medication may work for one and not work for the other. So it tends to be a very customized approach. Hope this answers your question and hope you find that light at the end of this tunnel.
All right, folks, once again, it's lunchtime, doctor. All right, let's get back to these questions here. Yeah, doctor, I've been getting some serious headaches, like migraines recently. My eyes are hurting. Do you think I should check my eyes? Sometimes I do squint to see at times.
So definitely, you're not only getting the headaches, but you're also having some vision disturbances. If you're squinting, there may be some sort of concern with your focal length and, of course, focusing, be it on the screen, be it on TV, be it on a board. I'm not too sure what is the you're squinting to read at what focal length, but please take that next step. Do your vision testing. In fact, we'd recommend a comprehensive vision testing. And what does that mean? You're not only going to do just looking through on the letters, which is your vision field testing, but you're going to make sure the ophthalmologist look at the health of your eyes. That way, they'd look at the pressures of the eye, they'd look at the back of the eye, and get a complete a comprehensive vision testing. I am certain, in light of what you shared, without me even doing a detailed examination, you will have relief once you do secure your eye examination. Hope this answers your question.
All right, Doc, and we do have another, well, some more information from the person with the pain on the right side of the abdomen. I know at the ultrasound, they're saying, I have some lumps on my waist and around it is painful when sitting on certain chairs and moves on my back.
Now, what I would want you to get checked out is if there is indeed a history of chicken pox or shingles, because what shingles does is that it appears on the dermatomes, especially on the back. This certainly would need, I don't have a picture in front of me, and I would rather do a full examination. So I suggest take that next step. Do go to, if you're not getting relief at one particular healthcare professional, seek a second opinion and make sure that a cause for this pain, in addition to the symptoms you're experiencing, is identified.
Okay. Good day, doctor. Is steroid injection good for heart patients?
So it really depends on what you're receiving the steroid injections for. Let's say it is an asthmatic patient who also has a cardiovascular concern. We know the steroid has tremendous health benefits. We always manage the risk or the complications of even the steroids. So yes, we do utilize steroid injections even for heart patients, but it is in consideration of all the other medications and exactly what the heart condition is.
Hi, good day, doctor. I'm 75 years old, but what I have noticed recently is sometimes without feeling anything, I have a little bit of poo in my underwear. Can you tell me what that means, please?
So there may be incontinence. And again, don't feel ashamed about it. You're 75 years old. So what we do know is that the rectal muscles, the sphincter in particular, does become weakened. The same thing like we're talking about with the varicose veins, the valves between the veins does become weakened with age. Same exact thing happens with the anal sphincter. And that may happen over time. That happens because of aging. That may happen even after problems with pregnancy. So there's a host of reasons. Please don't feel ashamed of it, but certainly do go to your healthcare professional. There's a host of treatments we can start. We can start topical treatments. We can first identify if it's a hemorrhoid, if it is indeed a rectal muscle concern. We can identify exactly what the cause is. We can start with the treatments and, of course, help you to function a better quality of life. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. Can you tell me if melatonin will help with mild depression?
So melatonin is not necessarily prescribed for depression. What melatonin is used for, it is indeed a natural compound that's utilized to help a person's increase in their quality of sleep. Now, what we do know is that those who are indeed depressed may also be experiencing feelings of anxiety, restlessness, and may not have good quality of sleep. And that's why, yes, the melatonin will improve sleep outcomes and thereby improve if you are indeed depressed. I do believe that it typically would be prescribed by either your therapist, your psychologist. Make sure, however, it's not interacting with any of the other medications you're taking. Hope that answers the question.
Good afternoon, doctor. At what age and how often should women get a pap smear or mammogram?
So that one is a layered question. When it comes to pap smears, let's deal with each one. First and foremost, we need to know a family history. If there is a family history of cervical cancer, then we recommend the pap smears much earlier. Similarly, if there's a family history of breast cancer, we recommend the mammograms much earlier. If there is, and when we say family history, if there's a maternal aunt, if your mother, either one of those, because there's a strong genetic component. Typically, for pap smears, the aim there is to rule out cervical cancer and, of course, to rule out any sort of HPV-type infection that is treatable. We start those once you are sexually active. So it can be from as age 18, 25. Let your general practitioner, your family health care provider, give that guidance. with respect to mammograms now, the mean age when we tend to see breast cancer patients, it tends to be more 35, 40. So I tend to recommend from age 35, 40 is the general recommendation, but again, on family history, signs, and symptoms. Why I would say earlier than the typical 40 is because we've had patients at age 33 presenting with a small lump that ended up being breast cancer, and they ignored it because they would have read somewhere that no, you don't start your mammograms until 40. So I would say listen to your body. Each person presents differently. If you're feeling a sign and symptom, if you're feeling a lump, please get it checked out. If you've reached 35 and have not had a pap smear or a mammogram, please get them done, especially the mammogram, and know your family history. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get a question here from Sangeet 106.1. Hi, good afternoon. Can I take a supplement every day together with a vitamin B6 and vitamin C? Or is it too much? Can you tell me the correct way?
Thank you so much for asking. And I understand why I would say our population has been programmed to think that they need to take a supplement every day. Again, I tend to lean on healthy eating. You can get the same exact micronutrients in your meals, but if you're not eating well, then sure, you may need to take that supplement. I would rather you lean on every other day if possible, because there, as I mentioned yesterday, there is such a thing as vitaminosis, where the body has way too much extra vitamins and now it has to be processed out by the kidneys and can even become toxic to you. So let's make sure, one, you're eating well, eating your nutritious meals, staying hydrated if you do want to engage in taking a vitamin every single day.
Good afternoon, doctor. I get diarrhea regularly, but sometimes I don't even get to reach the toilet. Is it normal or do I need to go to the doctor?
So definitely, absolutely not normal. Any sort of symptom that's disrupting your quality of life is not considered normal. This is a case of, again, not just diarrhea, but incontinence, because you're not able to hold before you reach to the washroom. So we'd want to investigate the gut health, and we'll want to investigate the rectal muscles. So please do see a health provider, your GP, your family doctor, privately, publicly, just go ahead and make that appointment to see someone.
All right, folks, 12:32 on time. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, Sky 99.5 FM, and of course, Vibe City 105. 627-3223, 625-2257, and your WhatsApp messages at 306-1061. Hi, good afternoon, Doctor. Can you tell me a little bit more about the symptoms of lupus?
So thank you so much. Yes, we certainly can. So when it comes to lupus, let's talk about these symptoms. One can experience a wide variety of symptoms. First and foremost, no two cases of lupus are exactly alike. They can be mild symptoms, they can be severe. Some of the generalized symptoms can indeed be fatigue, feeling weak. Or you can see on the skin this butterfly-shaped rash that covers the cheeks and bridges over the nose. You may also see skin lesions that appear over time and worsen if there's sun exposure. Couple things to keep in mind. The generalized symptoms, you can have headaches, you can feel confused, you can feel shortness of breath, chest pains. So there are a host of things, and again, in your guardian, we went through organ by organ. So to those who want to check in, page 23, page 24. So you can have, unfortunately, lupus affects the brain and nervous system. The lupus affects the heart and lungs. It affects the kidneys, stomach and intestines, ear, nose and throat, the skin, muscles and joints. So you can even have arthralgia or arthritis. and also affects the circulatory system. So because it affects every single system, it can present with generalized symptoms. Some of our patients end up having miscarriages. What we say, second trimester miscarriages. And then on further investigations, we realize, unfortunately, it's lupus that they have. Keep in mind, ask your healthcare professional if you're having these range of symptoms, that consider if it is an autoimmune disease. And of course, know your family history. I hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor.
Good afternoon. Just calling to find out.
Yeah, we're hardly hearing you, miss. Can you speak up a little bit?
Sorry. Just calling to find out if the doctor has a private practice.
So thank you so much for asking. The minute we reopen, we will let you all know. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Dr. After, I am getting a slight pain in my right lower abdomen. Can you tell me what it can be? Thank you.
So any sort of pain in the right lower abdomen, I'm not too sure what the age is, but we must rule out appendicitis. That's the most common cause of pain in right lower abdomen. There are other causes. It could be some sort of gut infection. It could be any sort of pain, not just pains, but if there's any, like what we mentioned earlier, irritable bowel syndrome. Couple things that we'd always want to make sure we're ruling out. If there's any diarrhea or associated constipation. But typically, any pain in the right lower abdomen is indeed. We must rule out appendicitis.
Right, let's get this call here. 6273223. Line one. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon to the doctor. Two quick questions. A friend of mine breaks out in allergies. It seemed to be allergies. She's done blood tests, she's done a number of tests, and they can't zero in on what is this situation. You have any advice on that? And secondly, for heart patients, what would you suggest heart patients, besides with normal medication, would you encourage them to take on a supplement, per se?
So great questions. Let's jump into the last one, the heart patient. So yes, we would want to make sure for our cardiovascular patients that they are indeed on a vitamin B. Why in particular? Because the vitamin B tends to be one of your essential micronutrients, and you want to ensure there's proper circulation. I particularly put all of my patients on the vitamin B complex. Thiamine, riboflavin, all of these reduce the neuropathy associated with hypertension. Now, for the patient with allergies, allergies can be complex. Sometimes we may need to do the allergic testing to ensure that we can identify the cause of the allergy. One can be allergic to pet dander, one can be allergic to flowers, one can be allergic to the dust in your curtains, in your carpet, one can be allergic to foods. In fact, I remember very closely a colleague in medical school was allergic to Panadol, and Panadol is the mainstay of treatment for just about all pain or any sort of concerns with pain. So it really depends on what the person is specifically allergic to. Sometimes it may take that allergen testing to be able to decide that. Hope that answers your question.
Good afternoon, doctor. I'm eating pepper. Is eating pepper from a young age. I'm 53 years old and still eating a lot of peppers. Is that good or bad?
This Trini here on the phone is not a fan of peppers because it can predispose you to ulcers. But you seem to have been having this, you said, for quite some years, and clearly it's not affecting you in a negative way. So no, I will not say anything is wrong with it. If it's negatively impacting your health, then certainly you want to reduce it. Everything in moderation.
Hey, Doc, is there any harm in taking a B12 injection every month?
So again, it really depends on what is the indication. Again, there are some, I would say, institutions around that come and advise on all of these extra supplements. That's not always necessary for the body. Let it be, if it's prescribed by a healthcare professional who's familiar with all of your health concerns and deficits if need be, then I would recommend that B12 injection. It's not necessary every month if there's an indication for it. So let's talk about some of those indications. We do recommend B12 injection for Alzheimer's patients, for Parkinson's patients, probably for stroke patients, but it's based on their symptomatology. Hope that answers the question.
Hi, good day, Doc. I would like to know what exactly is connective tissue disease and what are the symptoms? Thanks.
Great question. In fact, that is one that I will do in our Health Plus. You see, within the whole body, connective tissue diseases affect all different parts of the body because there is that quote-unquote connective tissue found throughout. You find connective tissue in your skin, in ligaments, in cartilage, in bone, in blood vessels. In fact, the connective tissue that we reference is something called collagen. So if there's a deficit in collagen, then there is indeed that deficit throughout the body, the ligaments, the tendons, the bone, the muscles, the skin. If there's that collagen deficit, how does one get connective tissue disorders? It tends to be genetic, or it tends to be triggered, may even be triggered by an infection, maybe an autoimmune disease, similarly to what lupus is. So that's one that we really don't often talk about, and I think it's one that deserves a little bit more detailing in our Health Plus publications.
All right, good afternoon, Doctor. 6 years ago, my mother had Hodgkin's lymphoma, stomach, into remission, right? Sadly, she passed away last December from oral cancer. What is the probability I am at risk of either cancers or breast or cervical cancer?
Right. Allow me to express my condolences on you not having your mom with you. And I'm really pleased to know, however, that you're concerned about your risk factors. Now, when it comes to Hodgkin's lymphoma, that lymphoma can present in several ways. So yes, it's directly linked to the presence of the oral cancer, because the lymphoma can present in any part of the body. What is your risk? And that's so crucial to know. You do also have an increased risk of Hodgkin's lymphoma, because yes, it is indeed genetic, especially presents more so in females than males. And I do hope that you are screened, not just for the Hodgkin's lymphoma, but for the other cancers that you mentioned, the oral cancer and of course breast cancer. Keep in mind, this is one of those cancers that can be genetic.
All right, blessings to you, doctor, to you all. I'm very concerned about my children and grand's health, because their dad and most of his family died from some form of cancer. One of my grand, the tender age of 12, has a large fibroderma, removed from her breast. Is there any blood test in Trinidad they can take to see if they have any trace of cancer? The Cancer Society told my daughter they don't do that test.
Thank you so much for finding out. Now, for fibroadenoma, right? Keep in mind, a fibroadenoma is not necessarily cancerous. And what we don't necessarily do is a blood test. We may do the ultrasound that gives us a lot more information. And of course, the even first line screening, the mammogram. Those give us information that will help identify if there is a lump, if it is indeed cause for concern. The only way we can identify, now move the next step forward, if it's cancerous, is if we do a biopsy. So I think it's probably just a little bit of misinformation, or sometimes we hear part of the information and may not absorb it accurately. So yes, there are tests that can be done, but not necessarily a blood test. Hope that answers your question.
All right, good day, doctor. I am 49 years old and my doctor gave me a week's... All right, good day, doctor. Can an anemic person with low blood count take B12 shot, and how often?
So yes, an anemic person can take their B12, but what I would recommend that they be taking is their iron sulfate tablets and, of course, some sort of vitamin C. You do need vitamin C to be able to absorb the ferrous sulfate within the gut, and that is crucial. You can take the B12, but again, let's see if we can get it through our normal nutritional supplies.
All right, let's get a question here from our Sky 99.5. Hi, good day, doctor, and all the listeners on Sky. I would like to know about lupus and one having it only in their hair, scalp, and not skin.
Yes, so it can present like that as well, just in the scalp. That may be the cutaneous lupus erythematosus, which tend to present more so on the scalp. It may even present around the ears or in very hidden areas on the body. What is recommended is that when you do see your doctor, you want to ensure they do something called the ANE, your anti-nuclear antibody. That blood test will definitely confirm, it will show the immune system if it's most likely able to produce these autoantibodies of lupus. Now, persons with a positive lupus test is typically treated for lupus. However, we also may need one or two more specific tests. Again, sometimes we may look to do a skin biopsy to really identify if the cells are consistent with lupus. For all those who have any sort of skin lupus, there's a sun sensitivity that I would like you all to be aware of. You see, the sun exposure can worsen the presence of the rash that one experiences. You want to try to avoid intense sun exposure. And yes, us here in the Caribbean should be wearing sunblock with a certain level of SPF. You want to give yourself at least SPF over 65, 30 and higher. But please, the better the SPF, the better for your blockage. You want to apply that sunscreen for about 15 minutes prior to going out into the sun, and you want to stay hydrated. We here in the Caribbean tend to think that, okay, our skin don't need sunblock. But for lupus patients in particular, because sun exposure can worsen the lupus presentation. Hope that answers your question.
And well, continuing on this same lupus question, after all drops off, does it start affecting the organs?
So yes, unfortunately, after the scalp is affected, it certainly can affect the organs. But keep in mind, treatments are available for lupus. We tend to treat the flares, most importantly. We treat the pain. We can utilize NSAIDs, corticosteroids, as we mentioned early on. Even because it can affect some of the organs, immunosuppressive agents and chemotherapy tends to be some of the treatments involved. But please, have the conversation with your healthcare professional so we can resolve some of these symptoms.
All right, folks, 627-3223, 625-2257. Let's take a call. Lunchtime, doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doc. Doc, I've been saying to my friend based there that I don't like the word moderation. Because, you know, in these series of health programs, you get these doctors, medical doctors, PhD doctors, coming and using the word moderation. Now, I'll give you two quick examples. I eat a lot of pepper. My wife eats very little. Moderation would move us both to a place where we don't want to be. And, you know, and we have no bad effects. We've been living this way all of our lives. Secondly, I don't eat any meat. I met a primary school friend in the mall. He eats tons of meat every day. He's already had 3 strokes at 63. Maybe even more. I haven't seen him for a while. So I'm saying that if he gets moderate, he might eat half the amount, which I would think is bad. And if I get moderate, I might start eating meat, you know, 2-3 times a week, which, you know, is not going to help me. It wouldn't do anything for me. I'm fine. So I have taken the position that healthcare professionals, and you know, I may be stepping out here, should tell people where they ought to be ideally and let them work towards that. That word moderation can move someone to a bad place. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the perspective. Now, here's the thing. We can say, and I know we have said, avoid salt. That's what we would want to say to a hypertensive patient or to a diabetic patient. We'd want to tell them, avoid sugar. But guess what? The human nature and human behavior will not easily adapt to complete avoidance. So that's why we give patients the opportunity and the autonomy to make the decisions that will be best for themselves with our advice. Their moderation in terms of not going to the levels of extreme, knowing and eating with discretion. So yes, you're very correct. Moderation for one would be different to moderation to another. Of course, we give all of the health advice, but we try to also be empathetic with every single patient, knowing that if we were to say avoid this, avoid that, the patient themselves may not even follow the advice. So we rather they have a little bit of autonomy and help make the decision along with the healthcare professional. Hope that answers your question.
All right, we have 9 more minutes before 1 o'clock, your final lunchtime, doctor, for the week. All right, folks. No, it's today's Tuesday. I'm sorry. All right, good afternoon, doctor. I just needed a moment to say a big thank you. You were able to help me tremendously with my blood pressure issues. Also, congratulations on your pleasant radio presence. You are a delight to listen to.
What a beautiful feedback. Thank you so very much. You know, we get such positive feedback. And of course, you know, feedbacks like the one we had earlier on, but patients being helped. When I joined here on this radio program, and now we've crossed more than 500 programs, it was really just to help persons understand their health concerns and to offer advice wherever this program reaches. So to that patient who just sent in the message, I'm glad you are not only taking the advice, but you're seeing the results. Because here's the thing, I can give all the advice. It's really up to the listener to take the next step and be brave and hold that mantle in their hands and manage their health. So thank you so much, caller, the listener, for sending in that particular feedback.
Yes, great feedback. All right, Doc, can a mild hypertrophy heart be treated?
Most definitely. When we say hypertrophy, that means the heart is mildly enlarged. In fact, I would say most of our hypertensive patients may have a hypertrophic heart. How do we treat it? We want to prevent further complications. If the patient is hypertensive, we want to reduce or tightly control that high blood pressure. We also want to encourage a little bit of exercise so we can replace that hypertrophy with muscle around the heart. So in case the heart does have some sort of cardiovascular defect or infarct, which is a heart attack, the muscles itself is strong enough to manage it. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, Doc. Is pink salt healthy?
So our pink or Himalaya salt, it does have a lower salt, or sorry, a lower sodium content versus your normal table salt. But again, we must keep in mind what is our total amount of salt for the day, and not because this version of salt is modifiably healthier and less sodium means we're going to use it in excess, because you might be not getting the health benefits from that. So again, I'm going to use that word everything in moderation.
Good afternoon, doctor. I'm a mom of a teenager who stays in the bathroom way too long. I even took away the phone from them when they go. Can you give me some advice on how to help them speed up the bathroom process? Sincerely, a frustrated mom.
My darling, I hear you and I understand. Adolescence, teenager time really is a time where they are exploring themselves, they're learning about themselves, they are going through so many changes in moods and behavior, and they're sometimes we may call them tone deaf because they may not listen to parents. Here's what I suggest. First and foremost, when you're having that conversation with your children, or if it's just one, you cannot be in that state of being frustrated because they will pick up that tone. They will mirror your frustration. So you go to them with a sense of caring, go to them with a sense of empathy and calm, and try to understand what it is that's keeping them that long. Utilize some story, probably when you were a teenager, dial it back. Too often, we forget how to connect with our little ones. We may get so absorbed in our daily frustration that we may forget what it meant going through the teenager times and adolescence. And believe me, in their world, they are the center of their world, and they have a host of problems that are magnified. So take that time to step out of your world and go into theirs. Believe me, you will find resonance with their problems. I hope that answers your question.
All right. Hi, Doc. Can I use the saline in the ears?
So we do recommend these saline drops to the air, but only if there's some sort of infection, or if it is indeed we need to clean or clear the air. Again, let it be prescribed by your healthcare professional, because we don't just put drops into the air like that.
And doctor, how often for a week can I eat egg in any form?
Great question. Now, if you are hypertensive or if your cholesterol level is high, we'd want to modify how much eggs you're having. But eggs is one of your superfoods. You can have that every day. I would say no more than 2 eggs. If your cholesterol levels are high, then we need to cut it down. If you can remove the yellow part of the egg, even better. If you're using scrambled eggs, then use less of the yolk. Definitely do not try to be seasoning with salt. You can season with herbs, and that will take away some of that extra sodium. Hope that answers the question.
Okay, let's see if we get a couple more calls. We are able to take 2 more. We have about 3 more minutes. 627-3223-625-2257. Once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Let's go to our WhatsApp. A person who is 89 suffers with high blood pressure, took a pressure test, and it reads 105 under 49. Is that okay, or does it need to go up? And if it needs to go up, what can be done?
So I'm very concerned about the diastolic in this case. And the diastolic is this lower value, this second value, that value of 49. What I would suggest first and foremost is repeat the value, so we repeat the testing so we can be sure that it is indeed an accurate testing. If the cuff is not placed properly onto the brachial artery, you will get an inaccurate value. But at age 89, you also want to consider they may be dehydrated, they may not be able to properly be bending the hand or positioning the hand, there may be a host of things. If the patient is having associated dizziness, fatigue, shortness of breath, immediately, red flag, take the patient to the health center to be assessed. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's take our final call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. This is a program, but I just have one question for the doctor. I was diagnosed with oral light and cleaner. I never heard of that sickness before in my mouth. And it's very routine. I wanted to know what steps I can take to cure this and how long does it take to grow? Thank you.
Were you hearing? You were hearing that, doctor? You heard it? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, miss, we weren't hearing you. You were very, very low. Yeah?
Okay. I was diagnosed with oral lichen planus in my mouth. I never heard about that sickness before. And I wanted to know how serious it is, what steps can I take, and how long it takes to go off. I don't know if you're...
Okay, a little bit, yes.
That's okay. So oral lichen planus is indeed an inflammatory condition that affects the mucous membranes of the mouth, of the oral cavity. It's almost like a fungal infection because one may see these white, lacy, patchy areas. You may see even, you may experience even sores. It may have red, swollen areas. Based on how it presents is what the treatments we will engage in. One, it can be quite painful. So the treatments definitely aim to reduce that amount of pain. Two, we want to reduce the inflammatory condition. This tends to be NSAIDs or any sort of dissolvable NSAIDs to help reduce the inflammatory condition of the mouth. Now, here's what I would also want you to know about. We're coming into the last couple seconds of the program. We may need to discuss this a little further. Oral lichen planus may be because of a nutritional deficiency. Vitamin C tends to be one of those. It may be stress induced, or even it may be related to, and this is again what we'd want to rule out, an oral cancer. So please make sure it's properly investigated, and of course you're getting proper treatments. Hope that answers the question.
All right, lunchtime doc. Well, that's it for today. Thank you very, very much.
Definitely. Join us again tomorrow. Make sure you can grab your Guardian Health Plus for more information on lupus, something that we don't often talk about. And again, right here on Freedom, you can join us for your Lunchtime Doctor tomorrow, 12 to 1.
All right. Thank you there very much, folks. You've been listening to the Lunchtime Doctor here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Vibe City 105 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangeet 106.1. Join us again tomorrow at 12 noon, and do enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.